This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Well, hello everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 383 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And this week, an amazing conversation with Mr. Jason Bonham, son of Led Zeppelin's John Bonham, who will share with us stories of his time with his father, the records they shared, what happened to John's vinyl collection, what it's been like for Jason playing his father's music, picking up all the little hidden drum techniques from bootleg tapes. He shares some behind-the-scenes stories of the various Led Zeppelin reunions, what was planned for 2007 that didn't happen, and much, much more. Some absolutely fascinating stories from an extraordinarily unique perspective. Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Evening is coming through Australia and New Zealand the month of April 2023. Get some tickets before they sell out. This will be an experience you cannot miss. Go to metropolistouring.com for more info. And if you're new to the Vinyl Guide podcast, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. We have nearly 400 episodes, interviews with music and vinyl legends you may enjoy as well, such as episode 392 with Chris Shiflett of Foo Fighters. That's episode 392. Episode 294 with Ross Halfen talking photography and Led Zeppelin bootlegs. Episode 294 of The Vinyl Guide, Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top talking about a great many things, including his early tours with Jimi Hendrix. That's episode 293 of The Vinyl Guide. Jack O.M. Jackcheck of King Crimson, episode 111. Matt Sorum of Guns N' Roses, episode 292. Tom Scholz of Boston, episode 297. Robbie Krieger of The Doors, episode 306, and lots, lots more. Subscribe to the Vinyl Guide podcast for free in your podcast app of choice. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. And one final thing, I'm going to ask each of you a small favor. Please take a moment to leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever platform you get this podcast on. You know, give us 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars, say something nice. You know, this podcast is an absolute labor of love that I give away each week. I spend lots of time on it, and I'm happy when people enjoy it. All I ask for is a positive review and kind words in return. So please take a few moments, hop on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever, leave us a positive review. They're all appreciated, and thank you so much in advance, everyone. All right, with the upfronts done, let's get straight into our conversation with Jason Bonham and the celebration of the music of Led Zeppelin.
Surprise!
Hello, hello! Look at you, handsome.
How the devil are you? I look a little washed out. I think the screen's a little bright.
Oh.
I have to change the screen.
Where are you at physically, Jason?
Physically, I'm sat behind a desk.
Mm-hmm.
In my little drum room in sunny Florida where I live. So in southern, I'm like, 40 miles north of Miami.
Got it. Okay. Well, you got a long trip ahead of you coming out to Australia.
I know. Hey. I've been working out. I hope my arms are up to it.
You're getting that beach bod.
I'm trying to. I'm more getting a beach bum. Look. You know, I actually did say, because I have my friends in Australia are way more English and they're way more honest than my American friends. Oh. So they will immediately, as I get off the plane, like when they see me go, "Whoa, you put some weight on, haven't you? What did you do? Eat America?" Yeah. So I have been conscious about what my weight was the last time I was there. I want to make sure that I'm no heavier.
So, look, Jason, it's an honor to have you on the show. I'm really excited about you guys coming out to Australia. I want to remind folks, if they're not aware, Jason and the team are going to be having a Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Evening, April 5th in Perth, April 7th in Melbourne, April 8th in Sydney. I'll be at that one. April 9th, Brizzy. April 11th, Adelaide, then on to New Zealand. April 14th, 15th, 16th, Christchurch, Wellington, and Auckland. Tickets at ticketmaster.com.au or metropolistouring.com. How's that for a plug?
Thank you very much.
Hey.
I'm just writing down the dates so I've got them in my calendar.
Yeah, there doesn't look like to be a whole lot of breaks there. So, yeah, maybe you'll get an afternoon at the beach. That's about it.
There's no sightseeing on this tour. First off, for me, the greatest thing was when I got to do this 13 years ago now, I started this project as a little side fun project. It was never meant to be more than that. Just a little honor the history, where I come from, and be okay with it. So we did that, and here we are, 13 years later. The only other country other than the US and Canada to see this act has been Australia. Now, going there once, now, Zeppelin did it once, but they didn't go back. So the fact that we're coming back is my proud moment to be able to come back to Australia performing the songs with the project, with the band, and definitely is a very special time. We didn't play Adelaide last time, so the fact we've added Adelaide and we've added another show in New Zealand. So I got to say, thanks. I mean, we would have been back sooner, but a little thing happened, in 2020, which stopped a lot of things for us. So, but here we are, everything back open. And if anybody, feels a little unwell, it's suck it up, get on with it,
Look, if Jason can get over there and be on the beach with a pair of budgie smugglers, everyone can wipe the sniffles up and get to one of these gigs. So this show, our show is largely about vinyl records and experiences around records. And I would imagine that you and your dad had some records that you shared around the house. Can you share some of those memories about, what you guys were spinning together?
Yes. I'd say the biggest one in my memory banks would be, I'm a huge, let's go back here. So audiophile buff, I am a huge audiophile guy. So I am one of those. I literally collected Macintosh, because my dad had Macintosh 1978, MC-105s, two of those, which had the solid state amplification and the C-26 preamp. So I ended up wanted the same thing. So I have to have the sound the same, record player, everything he had to listen to music again. But the one thing I can't find is that original record that we shared together. Without going through the entire vault at Mom's house, which would be one of those times that, and I usually don't get allowed to do that, would be the blue vinyl version of Outlander's Demon from the Police. Oh. Which that was the album I turned my dad onto. Because my dad was like, what are you listening to? And I went, the best drummer in the world. He's better than you. And I was really cocky with it. And he went, well, play it then. Let me listen. So, and my dad ended up snagging that copy off me. And he wore it out. I mean, he literally did that got him into Stuart Copeland's playing, and then soon enough, Regatta de Blanc came out and he bought it before I had a chance to get it. But I still remember that blue, that Outlander blue vinyl Outlander's Demon album was, the album to get. And then he took me to see the Police. So that was another thing. He was so into it that we went to see them at the Birmingham Odeon in England and then got me backstage to meet them. Mm. So it was the greatest moment. And then you fast forward to last year and I'm on tour in Chicago and Sting was playing on a day off we had and my friend said, you want to go and see him? And he knows him and we end up. So we go backstage and I haven't seen him since 1979. I was a little younger then. So I walk in the dressing room and he says, Jason, you haven't changed a bit. And that was it. It was hilarious. So that one vinyl moment led to so many different, memories and stories of the same thing where I tell people part of the show when I play is I had this vinyl copy of, Outlander's Demon. But for me, vinyl, I remember I remember getting my first ever, you know, they say, do you remember your first ever record? Oh, I do. I remember exactly. And I remember it was an EMI label, but I remember buying it. Well, the first one was a Decca. It was John Miles Music. And it was at the time. So that, I think it was the song, I would say the time period would be about 78. It was the same year that Bohemian Rhapsody came out. So I'd have to look in my history books, and I don't want to touch the screen just in case you vanish. But it would be about that same time. Music by John Miles was a big number one in England for many, many weeks. And I ended up, weirdest thing, I ended up playing with John Miles much later in life with Jimmy Page. John Miles ended up becoming Tina Turner's musical director, Evan. So always weirdest thing for me, fast forward after the moment of buying your first ever record, Music by John Miles, Decca single, or might have been Mercury. I remember it, and then I had Bohemian Rhapsody on EMI, was the other single with I'm in Love with My Car on the B-side, which was Roger Taylor. Very smart, Roger, there. Very smart. So I got as much money as the other guy. And then now my final choices go down a bit here. Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia by Laurel and Hardy, which was... It must have been a chart thing at the time when it went in England. But yeah, I remember them really, really well. And another song that we shared was my father would always play Freddie King Going Down, to the amount that it would be really annoying to say, if I've heard that song once, I've heard it a million times, is, you know, now the original and that song is so good, but the amount of times I've been asked to get up and play it with another band, and there's nothing worse when everybody's doing the down, down at the wrong time or at different times. They're all starting it at different times and no one's listening to each other. But yeah, another one of those moments where the song that my dad played, one of the songs my dad played the most. I will get to the most in a second. But yeah, that Freddie King going down. And I remember him saying to me, can you hear something different on this? And I'm like, yeah, the drummer's slightly out. And he went, no, it's not that. He said, there's two drummers. And so when you listen to it, it's got almost like a flam in places. It's slightly flamming because the two players are not quite in sync. And it's, yeah, very, very studious thing to just tune into.
Wow.
The most played album, vinyl album that we ever shared would be, And it still sounds great, which is amazing to sound that great, is Rumours by Fleetwood Mac. And I didn't get it. When I was younger, I didn't get my dad was talking about Mick Fleetwood's playing. And he kept saying it was more about, it wasn't what he was doing. It wasn't the amount of things he did. It was the simplistic, or why would he hit this beat when he did it? And why would he do this? And when I'm now older and wiser, I can listen to it with a whole other thing, where when I was younger, I was going, where's the guy's chops? I don't hear any chops. You know, where I want to hear Billy Cobham again. I want to hear this. You know, I want to. It was a different thought pattern about listening to a drummer. You know, so Stuart Copeland, yeah, my dad got it because the guy was like, energy, energy, energy. You know, it was all on. You know, it was like I didn't get Charlie Watts when I was younger, you know, until I was old enough to go, oh my God, the pocket on that is just so good, you know, on Honky Tonk, you know, and you listen to the bat, 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 and you're like, oh my God, you don't realize that's more important than going, you know. So definitely, you know, the Fleetwood Mac thing, just to hear it all those years ago over and over and over again And then just to, you know, to have that refocus many, many years later. And it's still now, it comes, you know, it's one of those albums that I get to every now and again on my playlists. It'll come in, oh, and I'm going, you know what? It still sounds, you know, to this day, amazing. Especially now with, like, now I have all the streaming platforms and the master files that I can, you know, now I spend, you know, I'm the idiot that goes out and spends like 20 grand on a streamer and the cables are connected up. And so I can listen in perfect sound recording. And sadly, some things shouldn't be listened to like that because you can hear how bad they've been recorded. You can go, what the hell is Ronnie playing over there?
Do you still have the stereo? You know, from your dad, and you said the records are somewhere, probably in a closet somewhere, but they do exist.
Mom still has the whole thing all set up the same. It's, you know, as I said, she didn't let me take it out the room, so I had to invest in looking for the same equipment, which is, if you can see, it's not, if you can, over in that corner the room, I have a whole bunch of the 78 Macintoshes on top of that and that thing there. I mean, my main thing is, as I said, it's the and now, you know, I'm more of a, the audio file. I took basically notes of everything that Dad had and got it, you know, in the high res, you know, whether it be through like a Tidal or whatever you can get the high, you know, the biggest, you know, file to play. You know, I'm one of those, I don't usually preach it, but I went from playing it on the iPod, playing it on the iPhone, then connected it through the computer to the USB, and then compared it to another streaming device, and then compared to another, till it got to where you go, oh my God, I didn't realize it would sound so alive again, to the fact that now I can, when you put something on and you can start crying again, because you suddenly feel like you've heard it for the first time in your life. Music, for me, that is pure genius of music. And I'm lucky enough to still be into it that much that it still does that to me.
Now, listening to your dad's music, and you're playing it, obviously, and been doing so for years, I imagine you're still discovering bits of your dad's playing that you didn't realize were there, or unearthing a few things here and there. Would that be right?
Yeah, I mean, and that is, without a shadow of a doubt, most definitely happens when I'm listening to the master files, or, you know, in the master qualities, you know, from the 96 bit, is it, or the even higher.
Right.
If you can get it and into a good streaming device, as we always like to describe it, as you wouldn't put paper on your drum kit for drum heads, would you? So why would, you know, so look at it as it's the best form of listening to the music, you know, mm-hmm. of connecting it up. It's like the best drum head for your drum. That's how I justify the money for listening to it. But I am, as I said, yeah, when you start listening to it again, for years, I would agree with people. I would agree with them and say, oh, yeah, oh, my God, yeah. Oh, that squeak in the bass drum pedal in Since I've Been Loving You. I'd never heard it. So, you know, now I have my moments where, when I'm allowed by the wife to come and sit over and do nothing, as she thinks I'm doing. Listening to music isn't nothing. So I will sit and listen, you know, to the files and listen to music. One of my favorites listening to him is, as I said, it's the grace notes, the little things that he does or doesn't do, the space he gives. They all had a place. You know what I mean? From John Paul Jones to it, it wasn't just, we're going to play the same as the other guy and do what it was. And the way Jimmy layered guitars and the way it was spread out and a vocal would be here. And so that for me is great to listen to, because you definitely get to hear different things. It's funny, I've connected my stereo up, so now it feels like when I'm sat here, when I listen to Dad play, it's like I'm sat in his seat.
Right.
So the left and right is to me as a drummer. So the first rack tom is to my left, rather than when you listen to it normally, it would be to your right.
Right.
As somebody watching him. Mm-hmm. So if you ever want to know what it feels like, just switch the left and right round on the back of the system and listen to the old man. And you'll suddenly have this feeling of you're there mm-hmm. on his kit when he's playing and he goes round. So the hi-hat is naturally to your left, but you're sat on a drum kit. Unless you're left-handed, of course, and then no.
Do you have additional tapes of your dad playing? I mean, I would imagine he probably recorded, being an audiophile, he probably recorded himself quite a bit. Are there tapes that belong to the family that are of your dad playing that you could hear?
Believe it or not, Dad didn't like to play at all at home. He had no recording equipment. I mean, we've got like his old Reeboks, two-track, that one. That was literally just to be able to play mixes when he came back from the studio, you know, they'd make another reel. So I know I found a whole bunch of a box of tapes, reel to reels at home. Last time I was there, but I'd need to get the machine up and running and hook it up, which, you know, I will save that for a YouTube episode of like, let's get this thing up and running. Let's find out if we've got anything that hasn't even been released yet. Because they're all unmarked. That's the best of it. Or they've just deteriorated, you know.
Well, yeah, my first reaction is, yeah, you probably need to get those in the hands of a professional, you know, someone who knows how to take care of it and probably restore them to even see it.
Because they might just kit, you know, you put them in the machine and it just erases them the moment you press start.
Yeah,
it's true that you know, I think they had to do that with the Nedworth when they were doing the Nedworth mixing. Mm-hmm. They had to like bake they only had the U-matic tapes. They had to bake the tape or whatever it was again to like preserve what was on there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, imagine like all the multi-tracks they've got, you know, the two, the from the 1-inch to the 2-inch. Sitting in, you know, at Jimmy's facility or whatever. I mean, you know, who knows? We need we definitely need the book, you know, down aisle number thing is the same. We need like a Bill Wyman's collection there of like his, you know, everything he has and everything the Stones do.
What song of his or that your dad played on is the toughest to play, pushes you to a limit?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with 2 Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. What song of his or that your dad played on is the toughest to play, pushes you to a limit?
The toughest song to play correctly is Rock and Roll, because it's the 16th note on the snare drum that you don't really hear, but if you ever watch him play the song, you see him do it. So there's an underlining grace note of with his left, not only with his right, which is the total it's like everyone says, oh, it's the Little Richard thing that he did. And it is true, you know, that like you know, you keep on knocking, but you can't come in. That is, Dad was such a fan of that, you know, of that thing. So that one for me to play it really correctly is it's that double, it's old, you know, it's like doing the old Texas shuffles and things. It's they're all two-handed stuff. But it's so done, so you can't really hear it. So you're only generally hearing the accent. But if you don't do it, it's missed. You know what right. I mean? It's like when you don't do that, it doesn't make it. So that's when I always used to say, I used to listen to other these great drummers doing covers of rock and roll live from Alex Van Halen. And I used to go, it just sounds like boom, bap, boom, boom, bap, boom, bap. But I'm going, why doesn't it groove? What's it missing? Why is he playing it so different? Until I watched a clip, Dad doing it at Nedworth, and was like, look at the left hand. Oh, my God. You know, the left hand is going all the way through like a machine gun, you know.
Now when I go to see the Jason Bonham Led Zeppelin evening, I'm going to be watching your left hand while you play that. That's the secret sauce. Is there anything that you've noticed in your drumming in the last few decades that maybe your dad didn't teach you before 1980, but something that is genetic, something that you've picked up somewhere that is just there?
Oh, I mean, a lot of it now is, as I say, a buddy of mine said, it's not that you play everything exactly the same. It's like, and the way my approach to it was like, when you listen to any of the live shows from Dad from different tours, there was never one, he always wanted to better the performance. Mm-hmm. He didn't like to stick with, oh, this is how I did it on the album. I want to make sure I can do it as good as that again. Mm-hmm. Dad always wanted the energy live. He loved to do, you know, sometimes people would say a bit overplaying, but it brought an energy when Robert said, because when your dad was on, you know, in a live environment, it was fire. It was hold your horses. You know, we got to keep up with this guy. This guy is taking it to a whole other level tonight. And when we were all firing like that, because it took somebody like he was the fire starter. And it was like, come on, we, you know, get ready. So when he does his yell before the show, you go, okay, let's go. It's like, right, we're going to do this for the next 3 hours now. So be weary. You know, I still love the greatest performance ever from the, you know, and the one we've grown up on is from the Song of Man to Say, you know, that 73 performance. His drumming on that show is just mind boggling. Just the things he does, just the groove, just the, next time you're not, I haven't got time, you can just sit in a room with a 150-inch screen and a projector, like I've got here, and a few speakers and surround sound and whatever. Immerse yourselves in The Song Remains the Same and go to the Dazed and Confused section. Mm-hmm. And more than go to the jam when they're going doing the jam, and just the off this on the spot pick where he's going here, let's go, you know. And Jones is like going, okay, I don't know where we're going, let's go. You know, I'll follow mm-hmm. you. Jimmy's off to be dad's like, we got to go with Jimmy. Oh, we're going this way. So just, yeah.
Do you collect bootlegs of your dad?
I'm very fortunate. I have, up until about 3 years ago, I have a hard drive. Everything that. ever that's ever been that has a Led Zeppelin on it at all, or even to do with Led Zeppelin. So even the Robert Plant concerts from his first tour to his second ever tour back in the day, because I recently, a friend of mine found, I was looking for a show where I got up with Robert in 82, mm-hmm. 83, for his first ever tour. And he got back to England. Phil Collins had then stopped playing with him. Phil did the American tour. So it was, I think it was 83. actually, it might have been 82 or 83, 82. Birmingham Odeon, Christmas Eve, and Robert got me up and I did Burning Down One Side with him. And I was looking for that for years, and somebody said, oh, I got that. And I'm going, and then I was like, anybody got it visually? Video, steady on, you know. We were lucky to have just a recording of it. You know, now it's so easy to record a show. Right. And, you know, I say this, when you go to a concert these days and you know it might be the last time you see the artist, watch it. Don't watch it through your phone. You know, one, we notice, we can tell when everyone just focused through their phone. We're here.
Yeah.
Be in the moment. But I am grateful for some of those moments you can go back and look at from a different perspective and things now. Right. And then I've got to capture some great live bootlegs of mine, which shows that I didn't feel I needed to record, but people have put up on the internet and gone, you know, it's a great version when you played so-and-so last night. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't even realize.
So as I understand, there was an impromptu Led Zeppelin reunion at your wedding in 1990.
Yeah.
Was that impromptu? Was it kind of planned that it would happen, or was it just the moment?
Well, it definitely wasn't planned, because one, if we had planned it, I would definitely would have made sure that my drums are on stage and not somebody else's. And the house band that we're playing were really good friends of mine, but the drummer, a very different sounding kit than anything that I would have played in my ever. So, we definitely weren't prepared for it. And I probably would have stayed a lot more sober if I'd known that was going to go on at the end of the night.
So how did that happen? Do you guys just start elbowing each other? Like, hey, what do you think? How did that happen?
I think it was more they wanted to have a little play, and they saw it as a, you know, like, hey, should we have, you know, want a jam? And it was like just an impromptu, you know, we're here, aren't we? Because and Jonesy, you know, the guy was at a jazz bass, so it was like, yeah, okay, fine. And all of a sudden, Jimmy, like, does the little wave, and the guy brings his Les Paul. He bought the guitar with him. So he goes, you never know. and it definitely wasn't impromptu, because I hadn't done any of those songs ever in my life. So we did, like, Sick Again. We did, you know, Bring It On Home. There was a whole four. I think somebody bootlegged it and it's out there. So, but, you know, one of those moments, you know, well, who was the band that you went in? Led Zeppelin?
I'm just imagining what the wedding band thought of, like,
because they all knew Rob, because we're from the same area, so they'd known Robert for years, so they'd all jammed with him before.
Okay.
But it was like when you've got the other guys with him, you know, it's that other thing, it's like one guy doesn't make it, then when the three are there, it was they just glided towards the stage, you know, without even looking like their legs were moving. You know, there was a moment where the curtain opened, the sunlight behind them. And I'm like going, what? Sober up.
So the Ahmet Erdogan tribute concert in 2007, how long was that being planned before it was announced? I think it was announced in September and you guys did it in November, something like that. How long in advance before September was that in discussion and planned?
Well, I got when he passed away, I had a weird feeling that they would do something for him. And then I had a phone call from my manager at the time, who was dear friends with Robert and used to be one of the heads of Atlantic in Europe, said, Robert's going to call you up. He wants to go out for dinner with you. He wants, you know, this. He wants to ask you something. So, you know, I mean, up until that moment, we'd had a little bump in the road, Robert and I, and it was probably through my, at one point when they did the Page and Plant reunion, and I was probably at my worst drinking. That took a lot of swallowing, because everywhere I went and everywhere I played, all the people ask me, like, aren't you good enough to play with them? Why didn't they ask you? So there was always this, like, huge, not that I'm supposed to, you know, it's not like it's my God-given, you know, and Robert. So we had quite, we went out for dinner, and then we had a really, really, really good chat. It was a very special chat that was some, basically, it was gloves off chat, you know, and he was brutally honest, and I was brutally honest. And then the next thing I know, in March, an email comes in and says, all right, we're going to get together on June 10th and have a little play and see what we think. And I'm like, who is this? You know, okay. And they went, here's a list of songs. Pick three songs. Or five songs. Pick five songs from this list. So I remember picking five, you know, everybody chose something, you know, and I, you know, joined in. So we get, you know, so I was playing, I was on tour. So literally I had to get another drummer to stand in for me for a few gigs. I was in Foreigner, and we were opening with Def Leppard. And so I flew back to England, landed in the morning, got to the room, set my drums up, and then had, like, you know, had about an hour and a half, like, shut my eyes just on the floor behind the drum kit. And then they arrived. So it was great seeing everybody, you know, so they said, all right, should we, what do you want to play then? And Jimmy went, oh, let's start off with something easy. How about House of the Holy? And I went, that wasn't on the list. And I went, oh, shut up. You know it, don't you? And that was it. That was the first thing. It wasn't on the list. We went into it.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, there you go. Yeah, so what if it's not on the list? That was the first thing. I should have known, don't trust the list. and then, you know, we did a couple more. And we did Kashmir. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, Jimmy turned and went, well, that's as good as it's ever sounded, Jason. He goes, so, you know. And Robert said, phenomenal. Okay, guys, he went, Jimmy, I'll speak to you in a week. Jason, stay. Jimmy wants to talk to you about something. He went, I've got to run. I've got to pick my soda up. And I was like, okay. So give him a hug. And, you know, and then John Paul Jones says, all right, I'll see you later. Bye. Great playing with you. And Jimmy goes, all right, how do you want to? Right. He goes, I want to do this concert. I mean, would you like to play drums, Elizabeth? Oh my God. And there was a little bit more to it. There was a, you know, we were actually going to consider in doing some other things. And I remember just going, and as he said it, it was slow motion. And I just zoned out. I was like, this is everything I ever wanted. But at the same time, it was so different for me now because I'd been sober for 5 years. And one of the biggest things that used to trigger me drinking was Led Zeppelin, was that I lived my life of expecting to be the drummer of that. You know, mm-hmm. You know, and it kind of it taken up so much of my time and so much of me being pissed by it or whatever, for whatever reason, that the moment I'd let it go, it comes back in and goes, sure you're over it? Are you sure? And I remember being, no, I'm good now. I can do this. You know, I can be good. And I remember my mom being really worried. She says, I'm scared that you're going to get to that place again where you're on top of the world and then the world is going to fall from beneath your feet. It's going to stop. Mm-hmm. And it's true. When you get around them, and I've been around for 6 weeks. So eventually time flew on, but when we had 6 weeks rehearsal. And so I was just being with their presence was also a wonderful thing. Being with them on a daily basis, which I'd never done, not all of them, for that amount of time. So just, I had so many questions. Mm-hmm. I had so many things I wanted to ask them. So they got to the point where they went, all right, stay on. Well, hey, two questions a day. Think about them. Think about them big time. These are important questions you're going to ask. You know, right. So, and you can't film it. We, you know, you can't do it. It's just, you can sit with the three of us and we'll answer. So, you know, I was going sleepless nights writing lists of questions down and trying to go, like, what would somebody, asking my friends, what would you ask them if you could? So with that said, I had a wonderful time. So weekends, if I went back to my house in the Midlands, I'd hang out with Robert. Robert said, what are you doing? Do you want to go out? And we'd go out. If I stayed in London, I sometimes would hang out with Jimmy and we'd play music and go out and have dinner. Mm-hmm. So just that, without the concert, that was awesome. You know, to do that, to go out for dinner. I mean, I went out with the three of them one night and we went to this Indian restaurant. We love Indian food. And Robert's cute. He goes, I know this place. And it was like a really authentic Indian restaurant because we had to share a table with another family. But I kept going, oh my God, this is so, those guys have no clue that we're talking about reforming Led Zeppelin. Your guys are talking about reforming Led Zeppelin. And they're asking, like, can you pass the poppadom, please? You know, thank you very much. I just kept having this, like, oh my God, nobody has a clue what we're planning on this table.
Well, you had to sit on that information for months and months. And was it always, because there was the one gig, and it was always with that one gig with potentially something else in the back. Was that kind of the conversation?
Yeah. I mean, there was like, you know, a night. And that was an important thing because we'd had so many, you know, there was one in the past where nobody, you know, they hadn't had much success in those kind of one-off events before. Mm-hmm. So just not only for me, but for the way everyone played on that night. And I still see it referenced now when people under comments on, they'll say, when you look at Led Zeppelin, it'll have must things you must know or watch from Led Zeppelin or listen to. And it's the O2, you know, celebration day is in the top of the list. Mm-hmm. So just, and I go, that's not really Led Zeppelin. That's them with me. So I'm very flattered and honored that it stands, it stands up. I mean, to be honest with me, I can't, I'm too critical. I listen to it now, I go, what were you thinking? But now I've played 13 years on. I've been playing it now another 13 years. I've played it a few more hundred times. So I actually think I'd like to have had another chance of doing it again. But I'll take it. You know, if it's one night only, then, hey, if we can play like that, I always said, if we played like that on the first night, everyone said, imagine what night four would have been like. You know, imagine what halfway through the tour we'd have been doing.
So. Were there things that were planned to happen for the show that didn't happen?
I mean, yeah, we'd rehearsed You Shook Me. And I think we dropped it the last minute. I remember saying to them, maybe why don't you do your acoustic bit? Because then it's just you guys. It really is just the three guys at the front playing acoustically. And they went, why would we want to do that? And he goes, what do you want to hear? I went, I'd love to hear Going to California. So I was there in a rehearsal room, no one else around. We were just about to leave. And they got the acoustic instrument, sat on the couch and sang Going to California for me. Hmm. Just me in the room. And then Tangerine, just on their own. No, I was just like. And that was it. We did that. And then I said, wouldn't it be great at the end of Rock and Roll that when you do the lonely, 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 lonely time that the place goes black and it screams and it's that little tip of the hat. And you know what they said? Why, when you'd worked so hard all night to have your own identity, why would you want to give the spotlight back to your dad at the end of the night? Because you take it. You deserve it. You haven't got to give it back to him. I was like, fair enough. I was like, yeah, it would have been great. But they were like, nope. Yeah. This is your moment. This is you. So it'd be very nice.
Well, Jason, look, we're at the end of our time, and I know you have to, I want to be respectful of that. I'd love to have you back on the show and hear more of these stories. And I will definitely be at that Sydney show. But again, it's great to hear this whole story of how, you know, and it's understandable how, you know, living in the shadow of someone as mighty and as popular and as beloved as your dad could, you know, it takes you some time to come around and be able to embrace it. And now that you have, you know, you're doing some phenomenal shows around. And again, I can't recommend enough for people to check out Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Evening. Again, coming through Australia, April, and then on to New Zealand. The guitar player, amazing, you know.
He is just
uncannily like Jimmy Page. I mean.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. Yeah, I have some great guys.
So, Jason, I hope to have you back on the show. We'll nerd out a bit more. We'll talk more about some audiophile stuff. I want to hear about how you worked with Jimmy Barnes. I want to hear about, all sorts of things. So we'll see if we can tee up another time. But again, Jason, thanks again. And we look forward to seeing you and the crew in Australia.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And yeah, you never know with us coming to Australia. That's what led to me playing with Jimmy Barnes last time. So you never know what's been planned for me this time while I'm here, but they've got to get in there quick. There's not many days off.
All right, mate. Well, you take care. Travel safe. We'll talk to you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye. All right, there we have it. What a cool dude. Oh, man, I'm hoping to catch up with him here in Sydney. I'd love to do a part two, so let's put the positive juju into the universe that it will provide us some additional time with Mr. Bonham. Make sure everyone in Australia and New Zealand go see these shows. MetropolisTouring.com is where you get the tickets and the info. And if you're elsewhere in the world, keep an eye out for the Jason Bonham Led Zeppelin Evening. This band is amazing. Google them up. Check out some videos, and I think you'll agree that this is a show you gotta go see. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I gotta tell you guys, I really appreciate all you folks when you share these episodes on social media. You're putting them on Facebook. I see it when people tweet them on Twitter, do Instagram stories and stuff like that. That is hugely appreciated. And please feel free to continue doing that. Post them in different groups or Reddit forums or whatever. Anything you can do to help spread the word of the Vinyl Guide podcast is very much appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and support some music, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.